You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We have not had enough of Miami Heat Homer Mike Ryan gloating and swaggering because his team is healthy, even though they're kind of exactly the same as Boston and Toronto. And it appears that the Nets and the Sixers are better, and it appears that the Milwaukee Bucks might be better as well. I feel like we all know that the Heat and the Celtics and the Raptors are a bit the same, but now the Heat are healthy. They beat the Raptors, and I want to get into that, even though I know many of you do not like Mike Ryan's homer guy, Jimmy Butler. I underestimated Jimmy Butler, Stugatz. He is more important than I thought he was. Never mind the silly discussions we have all the time in sports about, is this guy good enough to be the best player on a championship team? Jimmy Butler pretty clearly last year was damn near close enough to that, and I didn't think he was that. But evidently, having him around makes a bit of a difference. And while people made him a winner before he had won, he's kind of an important player offensively, defensively. He hit some threes last night, and when he is healthy and they are healthy, they have been a formidable team. But the reason I can't start there is because I'm increasingly frustrated by my inability on this show for 3 days now to get going a greatest car chase scene in the movies conversation. I have tried to do this for three straight shows, and the reason that I'm doing it today is because so many of you young people, ignorant, flouting your ignorance, just screamed at me about Ronin. Really, Dan? A 20-year-old movie? And then people get in with Blues Brothers and Bullet, and old man Roy is getting in there. Yeah. Roy, what was yours? I think you had the oldest one. Was it from Bullet, or was it before Bullet, after Bullet?
French Connection, right?
Is the French Connection and the Blues Brothers and Bullet.
Okay, well, Bullet, just so that you know, I saw it on the screen the other day, and I was hypnotized with a giant smile on my face because the scene was, and this is how much America's changed, more than 10 minutes. 10 minutes of people just driving around crashing cars in 1968.
That's nothing. 10 minutes.
Well, this is what I was going to say, though. Billy, thank you. Because what I was going to say is we've replaced the car chase scene with just the Fast and the Furious franchise. We've just put them all in one movie.
We've made them movies.
10 years.
Yeah.
That's what's happened. Billy, I could not engage you in the car chase scene on anything, and I thought it would be your wheelhouse because of Fast and the Furious. I thought you were going to come in and say, Fast and the Furious, it's just all one car chase scene.
Yeah, I said 10 years. I was wrong. It's over 20 years now, I think, of Fast and Furious action. But you know what, Dan? The Fast and the Furious isn't just car chases, all right? That's taking away from some story arc. That's taking away from all kinds of feelings, passions, stories between family members, stories between brothers. You know, if you ask me one thing, what's the Fast and the Furious about? Car chases is probably 10th on the list of things I would say what it's about. You know what it's about? Family. That's love. What it's about.
That's beautiful, Billy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
I've steered away from this discussion. It's not been a conversation for Mike Ryan, just because I know this game. I've played it all my life, is no answer is good enough for Dan. And I don't like playing that game, Dan. But I will say, if we're highlighting car chases or just chases in general, there has been a grand omission, and Billy, you're going to like this. We have not spoken about the one in Fast and Furious 6. Now, you mentioned the Fast 5 safe that was extracted from the bank and on the highway and all that. But the tarmac scene in Fast and Furious 6, where they're on a plane that's on a tarmac getting ready to take off for 13 minutes, making, and people have done the math on this, the runway 26 miles long.
It was only 13 minutes?
Yeah. Only 13 minutes.
Now, the largest runway in the world, and I cannot believe
A marathon. The length of a marathon. This runway was, somebody did the math.
Yes, someone did the math at the speed
not a sprint.
Yeah. The speed that the airplane was going at and the length of the actual scene suggests that the tarmac is 26 miles long. The longest runway in the world, and I can't believe there's one this long, is 18 miles. So, in the Fast and Furious universe, it's an alternate universe that has a runway that is long enough for this one chase scene. Now, this is on a plane. And there are some cars involved that are chasing said plane, but this should be at least highlighted in this discussion.
Put it on the poll, Gamma, please. Fast and the Furious 6, is it a plane chase scene or is it a car chase scene?
That runway Mike is talking about, of course, is the Cuomo Bamba Airport, and it is that long because of altitude reasons, just so we're clear.
I love that you have that knowledge in your head just stored there in a compartment. I am not a human being who is going to stand accused quietly like you did of simply saying to my face, no answer is going to be good enough. When all I was saying is, don't make fun of me because of Ronin. I'm allowed to go 20 years in the past to get a car chase scene if you guys are going to do Bullet and Blues Brothers and French Connection. And you're going to get mad at me when we don't mention, you know, Bad Boys. Bad Boys was right here in Miami, and you got mad at me, and I feel like Bad Boys was right around the era of Ronin. Why does Bad Boys get grandfathered in, and you guys yell at me like I'm your grandfather over Ronin? So anyways, I've been defensive about this, stewing on it for a couple of days.
You don't sound like it.
And I'm angry at all of you because of it. Stugatz, I figured that you got angry the other day because J.J. Watt at 2 a.m., tweeted scary hours while, walking onto a football field somewhere where he had to show everybody. He couldn't just work out quietly and privately at 2 a.m.
Right.
He had to show everybody, look, this is when I work out. This is who I am. I'm guy who runs on AstroTurf field at 1:45 in the morning.
And I'm guy who's going to show you that I'm running on the AstroTurf field at 1:45 in the morning because I'm incapable of doing anything without a camera in front of my face. I'm tired of J.J.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Should J.J. Watt play games with Captain America's shield on his right arm? Yes or no? Because I believe that Stugatz is right when he says that J.J. Watt is somebody who needs to play for Army.
It'd be so great if he went back to school and played for Army.
It would be wonderful. I love that J.J. Watt, we've all lived long enough to see J.J. Watt go from what he was. I mean, he told such charming stories about it being a pizza delivery guy at Wisconsin to becoming a true American hero, just built like a superhero and a defensive player of the year. And somehow, for some reason, this incurred Stugatz's every wrath from every angle, even though this guy is like the vision of the mythological athlete from the past. He should wear Thorpe on the back of his jersey just to be a guy from another time. And Stugatz has hated him. And I think it was the log cabin. I think it was the fake log cabin with an elevator that finally made Stugatz call somebody else a fraud.
I love what J.J. Watt is doing on social media, dropping all sorts of hints. Mina Kimes is like some forensic scientist trying to crack the codes. He's going to the Browns.
Yeah, Mike has been. Mike has wanted him. Green Bay wants to get into that game.
Buffalo, the Steelers.
I've seen a lot of people. Is that First Energy? People saying a lot, of making a joke about the watt being a unit of measurement for energy, that the pieces fit. And Mike Ryan is dreaming now. Are we going to have a situation in this studio where Stugatz is killing J.J. Watt while Mike Ryan is loving J.J. Watt?
I've always loved J.J. Watt, Dan. Yes. It's always made me uncomfortable. J.J. Watt's one of my favorite players in the league. Not to forget, like, if you can, what an amazing philanthropist he is. Just on the field, the dimensions of this guy's body, the fact that he always makes impact plays at that position. Can you imagine that guy next to Myles Garrett? Can you imagine it?
As we explored last week, he is really good at almost sacking the quarterback. The best in the league,
hey guys,
perhaps.
When you look at... When you look at the best chase scenes in movies, you know, I got to think, honestly, you go back to Bullet and Steve McQueen. There's something iconic about Bullet. You look at other films like Ronan perhaps with Robert De Niro, The French Connection, Billy Friedkin. Tell me that's not huge in South Beach with the Clevelander. Yeah, yeah. If I put on a showing of The French Connection right now, everyone's getting excited about Gene Hackman as Popeye Doyle. I mean, that would be something for the ages. I think.
Hold on. Mike, we're on a pirate ship. We're at sea. There are no rules or nobody's allowed. What the hell?
Our phones aren't even working.
What? Nothing works here.
Zoom.
Now, televisions don't work here. The air conditioning, the tiny fridge in here. ESPN turned that off too.
Oh, really?
How is it that this guy breaches security no matter where it is we're talking, even though we don't have security, even though I'm paying people $1,000 a day for security at this place?
Hire better security.
I mean, Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, you talk about a movie, that's just an entire chase. The entire film is one chase. Furiosa, okay? Charlize Theron and Tom Hardy, they go one direction, then all of a sudden they get caught up, they go the other direction. The whole movie is one elaborate chase. How can you not love Mad Max Fury Road? It's a chase movie to end all chase movies. Even Tom Kirchen loved Mad Max Fury Road. He said he wanted to go run 5 miles and tell Bob Uecker all about it. That's how excited he was. Forget about pirate ships. I'm telling you about chase sequences here, people. Come on.
You know what? I'm going to take this opportunity right now to reverse course. And Adnan Virk, I want you on the pirate ship. I don't want to keep you out anymore.
Wow.
I believe you have now earned it. I want to talk to you about your movie opinions. I want to know what you have to say about things. I don't want you to have to breach security anymore. I want you to ride with us, Adnan, and I want to hear from you. And I want to use your movie expertise because I believe Adnan is better on the movies than David Sampson is.
But he's employed.
Well, this is problematic, obviously, for the moment, but
Quit, Adnan. Do it. Quit.
Come on, let's go.
But listen, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Should Adnan quit right now? This is a new day.
Amin did it.
All right, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Let's make it a democracy here at Levitard Show. Would you like Adnan to be permanently banned and still have to climb over security? Or would you just like him to be welcomed on the pirate ship? All right, let's do this, because you mentioned Ronan, and I was actually happy to hear Ronan, because what makes a good car chase scene? Because you're talking about Bullet was 10 minutes long. The one in Ronan is ridiculous, but Billy's right when he says Fast and the Furious. We've just put all the car chase scenes in one movie, and it's gone 20 years long, and it goes down airplane tarmac.
It reminds me, Dan, with Coming to America, which I just watched again. And by the way, speaking of my movie expertise, Coming to America 2, I just received this gift box. I don't think David Sampson's getting gift swag, like I am, okay?
What is that? Wait, what'd you get there? So this is going on Amazon Prime. Everyone's excited about it. Eddie Murphy.
Wow.
What
you got? Say hello to the King of Zamunda.
Okay? Oh, my God.
You've got a crown?
He's got the crown.
What is that? A pillow?
I've got a pillow. And by the way, I always assumed you had sex with your bathers. I know I do.
What just happened?
Got rose petals here.
All right, he's got to get up. He's got to get off the pirate ship. Whoa. I'm now uncomfortable. I don't know what he just did. This is why he can't climb over security. What is that? What did you get from whom? And what about Coming to America? You went to you became a prop comic.
I didn't actually have a point to it. My point was this: the original Coming to America was a featured iconic barbershop sequences, as we all know. And then they actually made a movie called Barbershop with Ice Cube. So to your point, what Billy was saying, you had car chase sequences in Bullet or Ronan and the French Connection. And then they said, what the hell? Let's just make an entire car chase movie, The Fast and the Furious. So what Coming to America and barbershops did in comedy, I was trying to draw that analogy as well to car chases.
So will you select one for us? Will you be the arbiter here with all of the power and just say the single greatest car chase scene in the history of the movies, according to Adnan Virk, whose movie opinions you can get where, Adnan? Because we have banned them here, but you can tell people where they can find you.
Cinephile Podcast. There's no paywall. It's easy access. Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review. CINEPHILE. Despite the fact Dan will not give his stamp of approval, please do subscribe.
All right, so give us the best car chase scene all time, Adnan. Let's go.
I think it's French Connection, okay? I mean, literally, they did not have a permit. Gene Hackman was doing a lot of the driving, and Billy Friedkin said, what the hell, let's just go for it. They mounted a camera literally at the front of the car, which is why you get those great low-angle shots. And listen, Billy Friedkin, for perspective here, Dan knows, this is the guy who made The Exorcist, at one point was not happy about the reaction of the priest in a particular scene. This is a real priest. And he slapped the guy as hard as he could and said, now roll it, okay? There's one thing about Billy Friedkin, these 70s directors. They just said, what the hell? We'll figure it out. If there's a fatality in the French Connection, if Popeye Doyle doesn't make it, well, what the hell? It'll be a hell of an ending. So I just think the French Connection, if you watch that 12 minutes, it's pretty remarkable.
All right, I want to negotiate with you for a second here because I don't know what the story is behind your movie podcast, but this is what I do want to do, and I don't know if it's a good idea or not, but I want to negotiate with everybody right here in the Zoom.
On-air negotiations?
Yes, with everybody. Wow. Yes, let's just throw it out in public here because things are heating up all around us and we will have a home here within the next month, one would imagine. And so I would love if we could get Billy Gill to organize Adnan Virk and David Sampson to talk about movies on a mystery crate or something, because I believe Adnan Virk, Sampson has been our guy for many years on the movies. He watches a movie every single day. But yeah. Adnan has so many of these facts about the history of movies. I don't even know where you get all these stories. Where is it? Honestly, what are you reading a lot of reporting? Where is your information coming from that you can tell these incredible backstories on the history of these movies?
I think he just watches, reads, and retains. I mean,
look at that. Stugatz just nailed it. Watch, read, and retain. I mean, that is the formula for success when it comes to being a cinematic almanac. And let's be honest, guys. I think Samson's run his course, all right? Great guy. Wow. I've done his podcast. Wow. I mean, he's got his own panic room. There's lots to like about David Sampson, but it's a new day here, okay? Come on.
All right. I'm liking everything about this. All right, Adnan, we'll continue the conversation at a later date. Thank you for being on with us. For people who do not know, because we were calling you the other day, to talk to you about this story in Seattle, because Adnan knows a lot about a lot, and he's a real baseball expert, and he just knows a staggering amount there as well. And you saw what happened where in this day, after this summer, Adnan, you just can't have the white power treat players of minorities like they're commodities, like they're not human beings. And so he resigns, but we were actually calling you the other day because we learned together, wait a minute, Adnan is partially Asian. He can speak on behalf of this. He can lead the charge on behalf of Asians to make sure that, you know, what happened ended up happening, because Ichiro wasn't going to do it. One of the things I found fascinating about all this the other day, Adnan, is when it comes to social activism after this summer, Ichiro was unbelievably in the middle of that, could have gotten that fired with a word. He could have gotten that guy fired. But of course, culturally, he would sit that out. And corporate sponsor sit it out. Like, this is a man, Ichiro, it must be exasperating to you as a proud Asian man that Ichiro cannot say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, how partially Asian are you? I'm sorry, just because I think this is shocking to people.
No, it is funny, Dan, when people often ask me, like, you know, you fill out a survey, this is okay, are you African-American, are you Latino, are you Asian? I click Asian. And one time I was doing this in front of a guy, and he looked, and he goes, oh, I think you clicked the wrong box. I go, what do you mean? Like, I'm of Asian descent. Pakistan is in South Asia. It's South Asian, to be specific, but if there's not a South Asian option, it would be Asian. He goes, yeah, but people think Asian, they think, you know, I go, what, East Asian? They go, that's a different part of the continent. I would technically be South Asian. So as funny as that may sound, yes, I am speaking on behalf of all of Asia. And Mather's comments were so ignorant. Like you said, Dan, at any point in time, they would be tone deaf. But considering what this country has been through in the last year plus, the only thing I can think, and this is terrible to say, but it's almost as if he was taking truth serum. Like, he was thinking, hey, you know what? Everybody lies all the time. I'm going to be so transparent. I'm going to be so honest and tell you all what I'm thinking. So in some, perhaps, he felt he was being emboldened by saying, you know what, this guy's English isn't very good. You know, I'll be honest, between us, this guy's translator cost $75,000. Like, that's a pain. But when you actually looked at the comments, you said to yourself, how could anyone on earth think that these were appropriate comments to say out loud, much less think? And what creates the problem now, Dan, is this. You start to have the stigma now with the Seattle Mariners to go, well, this is the president, the CEO. Clearly, somebody else must espouse this feeling. And you go, well, hang on, that's not fair. Let's not paint one bad person the broad brush. But I would understand why people would now say, well, if he's ignorant and he's the one in charge, is he giving this message to others? And as you pointed out, Seattle is about as culturally relevant a place for Japanese ballplayers as you can imagine. Between Ichiro and Kaz Sasaki and Hisashi Iwakuma, like, there's several Japanese players who have had much success there. The community itself has a strong Asian population. For this to happen in Seattle, even to me, was so odd because, again, if it was in Arizona, perhaps, they don't have as much of a cultured population, perhaps, but Bottom line is this. He loses his job. He resigned. It were ignorant comments, disappointing. And listen, you've always spoken about race in America and what a touchy issue it can be. But I don't care what side of the fence you're on. Those comments are wrong, and there's no place for them.
Adnan, though, the thing that was most interesting to me, even as he smeared Latin ball players whose English is just fine, English learned with great labor, English as a second language, for him to slur them is one thing. But that's not where I got bothered the other day, even though he had done that. The thing that ended up bothering me was the idea, the gall, Adnan, in the difficulty in the transition between these cultures and this man, the money, the leadership, the voice, casually saying, why am I paying these interpreters, these translators, these life coaches $75,000 a year? The dehumanizing nature of the money, speaking that boldly about not wanting to understand the cultural differences. Like, it bothered me after this summer. It's not the tone deafness. It's not even the timing. It's like, you dehumanizing turd. How do you lead that way? How are you the voice of a franchise and you don't understand trying to save $75,000 bleeping dollars that you're helping somebody from another country make you money here? Like, what kind of idiot are you that you don't understand in a position of leadership after this summer that you shouldn't lead when you're that kind of idiot?
Yeah, think about our man Chris, who's a noted athlete. We've talked about the great speed of Chris, how fast he is. Imagine he's playing in the Japanese baseball league. Imagine he's playing for the Nippon Ham Fighters, one of Bob Costas' favorite teams. And Chris afterwards has, you know, workmanlike Japanese. He's taken some classes. He feels like he can order in a certain restaurant. But afterwards, when presented with the trophy, says, you know what, I'd rather just speak in English. Is that okay? Of course, please, you're a translator. Chris, it's not your, you know, listen, Stugatz barely speaks English well. It's okay, whatever language you're comfortable in, it's fine. So I think, to your point, how could you not be tolerant and accepting of someone saying, listen, I'm making a huge transition in my life. I'm going across the globe here to play baseball. It would help my assimilation if I had somebody here who could communicate, because perhaps I might say things in the wrong manner. My grammar's off. I might use the wrong word choice, and then I might get made fun of and uncomfortable or ashamed or embarrassed, or maybe I'll make the league look bad or the team look bad. You know, when you go to a new country, what do they teach you? The swear words first. What if I go on this team and everyone here is teaching me profanity and all of a sudden I'm using bad words, et cetera? I'd love to have a translator if that's okay. Hey, for $75,000, if you can pitch to great acclaim and great success, that is the least we can do. Dan, if we looked at what certain guys ask for in terms of perks, Nelson Cruz just signed a new contract. He got a new chef working on the deal. If Nelson Cruz can get a chef, then clearly a foreign speaker can get a translator if that helps his assimilation.
The part that was bothersome to me on top of this and the layers of bothersome, though, Adnan, is the idea that you're kidding me, sir. You're kidding me. You won't even value the guys you know as the money are valuable. Like, it's not, it's one thing to do that to the help because it's in the minor leagues and you just need to throw sort of human bodies into the machine of, you know, the maw so that you can make your commerce. That's one thing. But you won't even value the guys who merit value by any way in baseball that you do the math, the guys who are excellent, the guys who are indisputably good at what they do. You won't even value them.
Yeah, to your point, you want to treat everyone equally, and especially when you're in a position of leadership, right? This isn't just a guy who's kind of important. He's the president and the CEO of the Seattle Mariners. He is worth a lot more than you and I could even imagine. And you're speaking there informally, but still, anytime it's a public appearance, it's a public appearance. It's like when people put things on social media and say, well, I was just tweeting it. It doesn't matter. That's public record. When you put it out there, you have to own this stuff. You have to be accountable for it. And to your point, it's one thing if he was making a backhanded comment about a clubby, perhaps, who doesn't speak English. Again, incorrect comments, unfair. But this is a person of value. This is a person who's pitching. It's not like it's coming at a Mather's salary. Like, oh, man, I missed that last paycheck because I had to pay the translator $75,000. No, you made the decision to bring him into the team to win. If you don't want to win, if you don't think he's successful towards winning, then fine, don't take him. But that's part of the deal. You bring him in here, he's like a translator. That seems like a fair part of the transaction.
Adnan, briefly, this show's already kind of oddly been a Golden Globes-themed show when you consider our Big Suey. What are you looking for this weekend with the Golden Globe Awards?
Well, it's amazing, Mike, because I love Ricky Gervais more than anything, and he's so funny and so hysterical. Of course, he's not hosting this weekend, so that leaves a big void in my heart. But Amy Poehler and Tina Fey obviously have great chemistry. So I do look forward to their rapport. And what's going to be like, Mike, because so many people are going to say, I haven't been able to go to the movies. I don't even know these movies. So what's popular? What's winning? What should I watch? The Golden Globes is normally a precursor to the Oscars. This year, the Oscar nominations are coming up in mid-March. Golden Globes are this Sunday. The Oscars are going to be in late April. So the big thing that I really want, Mike, is Borat to do great. In a year of unpredictability, I think it wasn't only incredibly funny, but incisive commentary, deeply satirical. And you talk about a guy who is dedicated to his character. Stu Gatz and I will always disagree. He does not care for the method acting of Daniel Day-Lewis. But Sacha Baron Cohen is a Daniel Day-Lewis of comedy. He had to stay in character for months at a time, weeks at a time, in dangerous situations. And Borat is up for Best Picture. He's up for Best Actor in a Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. For those that don't remember, the Globes and the Oscars, they separate drama and musical or comedy. Maria Bakalova is up for Best Supporting Actress. So I'd love to see Borat do well. Sacha Baron Cohen's speech would be great. He's also in the Trial of the Chicago 7, so he's up for Supporting Actor in a dramatic role as well. Nomadland is the favorite to win Best Picture, although Aaron Sorkin could make a pitch for the aforementioned Trial of the Chicago 7. And especially for you guys, because your location, One Night in Miami. I am pushing hard for Leslie Odom. He's tremendous as Sam Cooke, who's one of the great singers in the 60s. It's a great movie. I hope you guys have all seen it. What if you locked in Ali, Jim Brown, Malcolm X, and Sam Cooke into a hotel room after Ali, then Cassius Clay, wins the heavyweight title, beats Sonny Liston? That's the premise for the film, directed by Regina King. So I hope One Night in Miami gets a little bit of love. And the film that I love more than anyone, seriously, Sound of Metal. It stars Riz Ahmed. He is up for Best Actor. He plays a heavy metal drummer who suddenly loses his hearing. It's an incredible film. I can't recommend it enough.
I mean, Jesus, pick a movie, Adnan.
Nomadland. Stu, all you care about is the money. Put money on Nomadland to win Best Picture, Director, and Actress, and you'll win some money.
Can you tell us, Adnan, because I want to formalize this. I want to figure out how. I don't want to tease our audience.
Do we have a deal?
I don't want to also be in breach of contract or do anything publicly I'm not supposed to be doing. So let's just, for this moment, just leave for the audience, okay, the idea of, we want to change our relationship with Adnan. I don't want him breaching security anymore. I feel like he has earned, after being electrocuted by the electric fence too many times, he has earned his way to be on this thing as much as he wants to be on it.
But you know, our audience always is going to want Adnan to have to breach security.
Okay,
to
but no, but it's, no, they're going to have to choose between the two. So, but Billy, can you make happen? Is it what I'm telling you? It seems like Adnan has agreed to at least do a mystery crate for you as we continue to dance this magical dance between not negotiating with him on air and actually wanting him on the pirate ship because he's got a contract. Billy, are you going to lock him down right now for a mystery crate?
Sure.
Excellent.
Billy, a man of few words. Back to Stu's point, though, Dan, it's kind of like professional wrestling. Maybe the audience prefers me as a heel. They don't want me on Team Levitard. They want me preaching security. I cannot wait to see what the poll numbers say.
All right. See you later, Adnan. Thank you for being on with us.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Adnan.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous, and if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought 3 for my wife, daughter, and myself for game 1. I live it, because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
Guys, we have some breaking news on the JJ Watt front.
What happened?
He's been leaving a lot of tea leaves and seems to be reveling in the fact that people are sleuthing around his tweets. At 9:59 a.m., J.J. Watt tweeted, "Midday naps, loathed as a child, revered in adulthood." Love that. Love that, man. What do you think he means by it?
I don't know.
Put it on the poll. Read that again, please. Say it again. It's like a quote. It's a poetry. It's a poem.
Is this a haiku? I'm not even sure. "Midday naps, loathed as a child, revered in adulthood." Now, guys, you know how every time he tweets something, I'm like, oh, he's definitely coming to the Browns? I've got something for you. The Cleveland Naps was a professional baseball team from Cleveland, Ohio that existed 12 seasons, 1903 to 1914.
Wow. Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. The afternoon nap, loathed as a child, revered in adulthood, yes or no? Because J.J. Watt is going to end up somewhere, Stugatz, and I don't know. Do you remember? What was that period? Because this is very conflicted for me. Houston and Texas are suffering a great deal right now, and the only time in the last 10 years that Stugatz couldn't say bad things about J.J. Watt is when he was doing such good humanitarian work in Houston that he had to shut up for about 10 minutes.
It was a tough period. It really
was. It
was
a dark time in Stugatz's life. I would say the darkest he's ever had, and he's been through some shit recently. So he couldn't say for 10 days or so, he couldn't say that J.J. Watt is a bum, J.J. Watt is terrible. And here we are, Mike. He's right back to his old ways because J.J. Watt is doing the J.J. Watt thing of tweeting in the middle of the night. Here I am in my log cabin being extra Captain America.
Can't he just take a nap? I mean,
you know what I was hoping for? For the Jets to be in on people this offseason, because can you imagine if the Jets were in play on J.J. Watt, how Stugatz would have to view this whole thing? Great.
Why would J.J. want to go there, though? Listen, when you're a guy at the end of your career trying to win a championship, the place you're never going to is the New York Jets, so I never have to worry about that.
Yeah, but you'd be pro-J.J. all of a sudden.
I'd love him. Yeah.
I want to talk about a couple of other things here because I was thinking the other day that Mike was absolutely right, even though it's a really super controversial hot take. Tua is indeed too close to his family. I believe that too close to his parents. I believe that is a controversy that we have to get out in the open because I believe that is so. And I will further argue that what you want from a quarterback, and I think this is indisputable, is that he has to have the relationship with his family that Aaron Rodgers does. That's the correct way to do that.
You have to be focused on football, not family.
Yes, not religion, not I love these people, not my brother is on a reality show and I love him under all circumstances. No, I want to be, put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Do you prefer a quarterback who isn't a little too close to his parents?
Here's the problem. We're asking for the quarterback not to be a family man, but the ultimate family man is the greatest quarterback that's ever played. So how do we dissect that one?
Yeah, Brady's very close with his family. Yeah. Very close with his parents.
That's a tough one. Yeah, that makes it very hard.
It's tough. And then, like, Patrick Mahomes is also close with his family. We know about his parents. His mom's very defensive. She called out Lou Riddick for calling Patrick Mahomes Pat.
Right.
That was funny. Didn't Lou Riddick publicly apologize?
I love that Lou Riddick, we call him Lou Riddick when he's Louis Riddick, but Patrick Mahomes' mom's like, you can't call him Pat.
No, please don't do that. Speaking of ESPN, can you tell me whether you guys noticed or not that ESPN wasn't very nimble on the Tiger Woods story? There was a lot that came out on the Tiger Woods stuff as it happened. And if you want a look into the life of Tiger Woods that is supremely human, HBO Max can sort of explain to you this athlete who has been in front of you for 20 years and you haven't really felt like you've gotten to know him, even though he's been super famous and even though you thought you knew him. And then after his Buick commercials, it felt like he betrayed you. And all of the sports landscape, TMZ, it all changed, right, on Tiger's watch. You've heard me say before that he got literally caught with his pants down because the rules changed on how we covered this stuff. We never did this to athletes. And that HBO documentary in two parts takes you through sex addiction, drug addiction, all the things that arrive at the simple mythological story that we love in sports. LeBron has done some of it. Be a prodigy, be great, fail and be human. Allow us to celebrate your redemption and feel good about sports. And so we've arrived in a place with Tiger Woods because we behaved badly with Tiger Woods in a lot of places where he's on the end of this. You just saw him win with his kid looking like a happy father coming through divorce, wrecking his wife in a way that was so unfair. And she's unspeakably classy handling the disgrace in knowing that your husband was doing those things in private, and then they all become public.
What you saw was him play a tournament with his kid, and you saw Tiger being able to pass along the thing that he learned from his dad to his son, and that was a very cool moment.
But what you saw is this human being put through the grinder, made a god by disciplined parents. All the story that's amazing of Tiger Woods is that he was groomed to be a robot, not a human being, a robot in that sport. And then fame got on his doorstep and pain got on his doorstep, and it became sex addiction, drug addiction, and then the redemption story that America loves. And then what did you feel when you see the pictures of that crash? It brings you back to where we started with the pandemic and Kobe dying. Some part of you connected with the frailty, the humanity of the superhuman, and the mortality in, well, what happened there? Could it have been that Tiger Woods...
I know where you're going with this. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because it seems as though in your what is going to be perceived as an ESPN criticism, which I don't think is fair because no one was particularly nimble when it came to this story, to the point that I saw this absolute trash can of a human, Greg Gutfeld on Fox and Friends, like, take the opportunity to say that his own father-in-law died. And he was a great man. It was just bizarre. I think he's on Fox News' The Five.
But I think the coverage... Listen, it's tough when you're doing it on the spot and something like that. That seismic happens, and you don't know why it happened. You don't know what's going to happen. I think the coverage was fair to Tiger.
There's journalism. There's journalism here. And what you're asking for is reckless speculation at a time that it's way too soon for that. So the only thing that people can really do, I even saw Stephen A. Smith on Good Morning America, who doesn't really have a relationship with Tiger Woods, just speaks to what Tiger Woods means to people because this was a Kobe Bryant situation. We didn't have the facts. And I think this is a place, given what's in his past with car accidents, that you need to be particularly careful with.
My mind went to a lot of those places, though. Was Tiger under the influence? Was he tired? Was there pain medication that was enabling him to be that exhausted where maybe he just closed his eyes for a minute, lost control of the car, went off the road? I think all that stuff is fair based on his past, and I know it was unseemly. I know people had an issue with it.
But you always...
But that's where my mind went.
No, but you always think...
Tiger earned some of that, Dan. He earned some of that coverage.
But you always think, though, that you're entitled, that you, however it is that you get your information and news is the correct and right way to get it because it's the way that you want it delivered to you. There's a great deal. You run this always through the prism of, do I want it? Should I have it? And we went through this with Tiger. You lived 10 years in Tiger's bedroom where we went from castigating him on the air. You're so immoral. You're awful. How could you betray us? You're the worst. You're the worst. You betrayed us in the Buick commercials, Family Man, to where it is that you ended up with him, which was a like you've gone back and forth with this guy emotionally. You've been connected to this guy as someone who loves golf, where you have felt hurt by him, betrayed by him. You wished for him to be condemned nationally, mocked nationally for his infidelities. And then as soon as he's hugging his mother and crying in front of a blue screen in Orlando, you're like, oh, why did I want that? Why did I ever want him to have to apologize to me?
Right. And I enjoyed the comeback as much as anyone, him winning the Masters a year or 2 years ago. But I'm just talking about the coverage, and I'm not just saying, Dan, you know, on the internet. I'm talking about ESPN. I'm talking about major news outlets. They took me to a place my mind was already at. Hey, why did this happen? And it's because we are armed with the images of Tiger in the car. We are armed with images at the beginning of that documentary where Tiger is stumbling around after being arrested, okay, for driving under the influence. Like, we're armed with those images. And therefore, I feel like the coverage was fair because I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah. What exactly are you looking for in their coverage when you levy the criticism,
well,
which
forgive
could be
me.
Perceived
Hold
as
on a
criticism.
Second. Hold on a second. I never even got to my point, though. We got sidetracked sort of talking about Tiger Woods, and I wasn't going to criticize ESPN. I was going to look at what happened there and just sort of be interested in the absence of ESPN news, how hard it is to be nimble with breaking news when you are someone who has highly questionable taped in the afternoon and that's in your 2:30 programming or The Jump or whatever, because we do these studio shows. This wasn't meant to start as a criticism in any way. I will criticize ESPN when it's merited. I was just sort of observing and in a front end way to a conversation I wanted to have about Tiger, that it was difficult to be nimble in real time. The way I remember, Mike, how Michael Irvin was covered with breaking news on the spot when he was accused of something 30 years ago and he came out of a strip club screaming at the cameras because of an accusation, yelling at him because we went straight to news and the news organization was nimble and immediately arrived on the scene of the thing that people... Man, Stugatz, how often... You tell me how often anything happens in sports where people have to go and find their television, not the internet, right, because they want to hear live coverage of what happened to Tiger Woods here. And so I was just sort of marveling at what happened there and the change in journalism and then how we arrive at this point with Tiger where that felt like Kobe Bryant at the beginning of the pandemic where we're all, did you see what happened? Right. Oh my God, a nation in mourning because an idol was mortal.
I think the lack of information though contributed. You realize that accident took place while we were on the air on Tuesday and it wasn't revealed until hours after we were done recording. And I think the reason that you had, you know, media outlets kind of nimble, not knowing what to do with it, is no one knew. No one knew the severity of it. They were keeping it very, very hush. Tiger's team was keeping it very, very hush.
So. Yeah. Well, I think maybe the Kobe Bryant thing, too, in terms of how law enforcement goes about doing these things, because there were all sorts of leaks. It was rumored out there that there were reports out there before the family even knew when Kobe Bryant passed away. When I saw the Tiger Woods coverage, outside of understanding how responsible they had to be given it, I actually compared it directly to the Kobe Bryant coverage, which I actually thought ESPN handled quite well. So I was like trying to identify what are the differences here. Is there less mobility because there's pandemic protocol over at Bristol? Is it harder to get a body? Is it harder? Or are we just waiting for more information because we've already confirmed through our news sources that Tiger Woods alive, that he's alive. So how exactly do we do this? It was pretty evident once the TMZ report started circling in that we lost Kobe Bryant. With Tiger, there was so much more that needed to be corrected out there in terms of tying down news sources and making sure that you weren't exposed from a journalistic standpoint.
How did you guys experience it? Because you, Chris, are somebody who's a giant golf fan, and this is the rare athlete that connects across generations. I don't think there's anyone listening to this who doesn't have, never mind thoughts on Tiger Woods, never mind just knowing Tiger Woods, but opinions or feelings about Tiger Woods. I'm guessing there isn't anyone listening to this who isn't in some way interested in the humanity of Tiger Woods as an icon across sports. If you love sports, you're sort of fascinated. How was that thing allowed to be? A greatness made from the womb, designed by parents of super discipline. And the place that that documentary went, Stugatz, and it went everywhere gracefully through the sexual stuff, because it could have been just, you know, 10-person orgies and a lot of the stuff that people would have eaten up as a documentary,
but they went deep, yeah.
But wouldn't have the nuance of this, where you've got a man who was friends with Earl Woods crying on camera, admitting that he was a bad influence to Tiger, for Tiger as he grew up, because of how much he cheated on his wife. And Earl Woods was a bad influence to Tiger because of how much he cheated on his wife, and Tiger saw it. And then you get to the end point on that, where he's buried, Earl Woods, who told us Tiger Woods was going to be a messiah. He's buried in an unmarked grave because his wife felt so betrayed by what the son did, because the son did the same thing to his wife, like created that same pain in L by publicly disgracing a graceful, honorable woman who had only done right by him publicly and evidently privately, if you believe all the reporting about what a majestic woman this was at the side of Tiger Woods, who reportedly hits his golf club, you know, takes his golf club and starts the whole thing that changes the way we cover this stuff. Changes really all of sports journalism, because she bashed the back of the car, frustrated by how he had shamed her with these things. And he learned it from his dad. He learned it from the guy who told us all along that his kid was going to be a messiah. That part of it, the story arc is unbelievable. Yes. That a robot would be that human.
But just going back to the coverage for a second, because I'm interested in this, were you put off by the fact that it felt like Kobe Bryant without knowing or not?
Guys, I don't know. I'm sorry if I misconveyed something. Mike thinks I'm going to criticism and you think I'm doing something else.
No, but were you uncomfortable? Were you made uncomfortable by that? It felt like we were watching. It felt like Kobe Bryant. It felt exactly like that day. And perhaps we should have reserved some judgment and waited to find out.
No, Scott, I'm not interested in doing an examination, actually, of critique here. I'm just fascinated that in 18 months' time, and I wish I was saying at the front end of a pandemic and the back end of a pandemic, in 18 months, this thing started. You guys remember how you felt as a country through sports and through one of these idols? When you learned that Kobe Bryant had been extinguished, a family man, you all felt that. That started this pandemic. And so, because I'm interested in journalism and the way these things move, I've been fascinated by the turn Brian Williams has taken right now into just full-on snark. And I don't want to do a politics show, but I'm fascinated by some of the things happening in the media that I've seen happening in the media since Brian Williams and all these guys who, you know, I saw someone write that Brian Williams is the Pierce Brosnan of Ted Koppel's. And I don't know whether she meant Piers Morgan or Pierce Brosnan, but they both end up working because Brian Williams has made the turn from, in the media landscape after fake news, from being a helicopter pilot in Saigon, fakely, who threw away his television hair and his whole career. And now he's a guy who's just doing snark and, you know, lefty stuff, making fun of the right side. I'm fascinated by journalistic things. And in real time, as this happened, as America could gather around a television from a time when, you know, we could believe in our news, I thought it was interesting that I couldn't find what I was looking for on the network I've always associated with sports. And I understood why it is that that would happen. I wasn't even making moral judgment.
Right.
I'm like, oh, this is interesting that it's harder now for this big giant machine that was always there for you, fairly or unfairly, no matter what the story, there for you. The moment a story broke, you knew you could find it on any one of ESPN's channels.
I only asked you that because my wife said to me, did Tiger die? And I said, we don't know. And she said, this feels like the day Kobe died. That's why I asked you that question.
Yeah, we're far removed from ESPN News going live. You could always count on ESPN News going to press conferences, and we've all seen what happened to ESPN News. Hell, we were even taken off of ESPN News. It's just repurposed content. I wonder if it is harder to get people like at a shot during COVID protocol. So I extended them that. I did start seeing it in other networks, but I don't watch ESPN as much for that stuff. I knew with Tiger Woods that I would be able to go to an actual news entity like CNN or MSNBC or even Fox News, for that matter, that covered it. I was watching CNBC at the time, and they broke into coverage. So I knew with a name like that, who's like word association, like he's bigger than the sport that he plays in, I knew that I'd be able to get the coverage that I was seeking, responsible as it may have been, on traditional outlets. I didn't even look for ESPN because he was that hyped. So, guys, I'm curious to know if you did the same thing I did. I started finding out on social media which entities were covering it well.
Right.
And instead of going to ESPN, I actually went to Golf Network because it's the Golf Network.
Sure.
They seem first on it. They had all their analysts there. With Kobe Bryant, if we're going to directly compare these two things, I wanted to go to ESPN, not just because of their journalism power at the time, but I knew that that's where I would hear Stephen A. Smith talk about it. I knew that's where I would hear Michael Wilbon talk about it. I knew the talent roster that ESPN had, and I knew that they were qualified to discuss Kobe Bryant. ESPN and golf coverage, not necessarily. There is, outside of Scott Van Pelt, there really isn't a name that I can say off the top of my head. Collins, like, there isn't a talent roster there
right.
that you can go to fill as the journalism does its work. So I went to Golf Network because their entire talent roster is qualified to discuss.
It's a 24-hour network that covers golf. Right, I understand.
ESPN doesn't really cover golf.
You went to Chambly? Is that's where you went to?
I would listen to Mike Greenberg talk about what it meant. Like, he's actually one of the golf personalities, as if he doesn't wear enough hats at ESPN.
I was kind of just bouncing around. I went to ESPN first. I went to CNN eventually. I went to the Golf Channel for a little bit. Came back to CNN, back to ESPN. What I wanted in that moment was Scott Van Pelt, because he has an intimate relationship with Tiger Woods. I didn't get it. We didn't get it till later that night. Yeah, I was just trying to fish around for the coverage that gave me what it was I was looking for. And what I was looking for is exactly what they kind of gave me, because I was thinking the same things. How did this happen to Tiger? And was there something behind this happening to Tiger? Meaning, was he out late the night before? Was he on pain medication? Was there alcohol involved? What happened here? I didn't mind that people went to that place. I was thinking to myself, oh my God, imagine when this man actually does die. Because the world stopped for like 6 hours. And he wasn't dead. And so I was thinking, me and my wife were talking, imagine what the reaction would be if he had actually died.
It shows how far we've come along, because we know what we want. And quite honestly, it's speculative. And it's not the way that it used to be. But given the instant nature of the social media apps that we are, that we're on, people identifying on Twitter, well, hey, this is where Junior Seau kind of, it was close to it. So what kind of darkness? Single car accident. And people start making those leaps. So embedded in your mind, you feel like you know more about the story when you're watching people that have to be careful. That have to be careful, because they might actually be liable on these matters, especially if Tiger Woods is okay. I understand where it goes. The problem is us, not in ESPN not being nimble enough or some of these other entities being responsible. The problem is us thinking we're a lot more educated on matters than we actually are.
So there's two things, because as a dad, what I said about Kobe at the time when he passed away is Kobe's missing out on the best parts. As good as he had it and as great as he was on the court, something we could never relate to, the best parts were yet to come. Seeing your kid do it is infinitely better than you doing it yourself. So I was relieved that Tiger's still going to have the ability to be with his kid, teach his kid, and if his kid decides to go that route and play on the PGA Tour, to be able to help and see his kid do it, because I promise you, it will feel infinitely better to Tiger watching his kid win than him winning himself. But I do wonder if this happened to Chris, because he's as big a golf fan as I am. Selfishly for me, once I was, Tiger's okay, great, he's not going to die here. Selfishly for me, I was upset because it felt like in that moment, Chris, we would never be able to see Tiger play golf again.
Oh, there were so
I had that.
No, yeah, there were so I many people, that. Chris, there were so many people doing that one where they were like, will this end his career? This was, it was fascinating to watch people talking past his life to wonder, will this end his career? Not where, will it end his life? What? There were a couple of golfers quoted. They're like, why are you guys even asking me when we don't know if this can result in compartment syndrome? Why are you guys, before we know that whether this is life-threatening or not, why are you guys asking me how this impacts you?
Right. Well, I could say that once we had the news that he was going to be okay, that's where my mind went. Like, man, have I watched Tiger for the last time?
A lot of people did that.
I started thinking about that last Masters where he won it. I was like, wow, that was it. That was the... But right. Back to Mike, Andy North, very offended right now by what you said about ESPN. Mm-hmm. And also, were you guys thrown off when you saw the Dwayne Wade video with Tiger Woods? Because I feel like he released that video around the time when the news broke the next day. And it was just like my timeline was thrown off. I thought he got into an accident right after playing golf with Dwayne Wade, but it was the day before. That was odd timing with all that.
I mean, there's no way for Wade to know that. He released it the morning after. But again, Chris, we did an entire show. That accident happened during our show and we didn't know about it. So I don't think Dwayne really knew about it.
I think that's a fair place to take it, especially when the news came out that it was a lower leg injury. At first, you have jaws of life and you're genuinely worried. Like, what does this mean? Is there blood loss with this type of injury? But then you realize, well, now he's got a rod in his leg, and golf isn't a sport that you lean on your athleticism all too much, but okay, instead of mourning the man's life, I'm thank God he's still around. But what he gave me, when I mourn his life, I'm going to mourn the fact that I'm not going to get to see this guy perform anymore. And that is still a viable question to ask right now.
What a amazing story, Stu Gatz. When you talk about what can now be the Tiger Woods documentary After a Summer, when The Last Dance had a relationship. ESPN and Michael Jordan created a 9-part commercial where afterward you weren't left with the feeling, well, I know how he became great, or I know how he became that. It was a really polished commercial that was popular and wonderful and did all the things in Michael post-career that Nike did for Michael before that, because right, we had access. But the athletes of our time are LeBron, Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. These are the guys. Derek Jeter is going to make a run here. The last gasp of baseball. Baseball's last star. Derek Jeter is going to get this kind of run on a documentary series. And you're talking about four athletes that publicly, right? This has been fairly amazing. To have them in the Nike machine for 20, a quarter century of feeding us all of our sports. All four guys, all of them, kind of unknown to us. Not hugely public, even though their jobs, their icon status, all four of them, these mythological creatures who didn't give the machine anything in quotes, but the marketing machine took them and took the mythology of sports and made them the athletes of our lifetime. And we're going to cover them now in the content age with documentaries that are several parts. Tom Brady's is going to be 9 parts, but I'm telling you that what HBO just did with Tiger Woods in 2 parts, Dugatz, showed me the story arc in a way that was profoundly human. But this is where we're also human, because I'm not kidding you. I burst out laughing during a time where a lot of people were scared and wondering, is Tiger okay? And somehow you feel a connection to one of these icons, even though you've never really known him. And you're like, is he okay? Is he going to be okay? And so I go to where the news is, and then I see the first comments. And the first comments where people are searching for news, and the news is just, we don't know what the status is, but Tiger Woods' life may be in peril. People writing into CNN immediately. At least he will be faithful until he can walk again. Who said you gotta walk to lay the pipe? By the looks of it, he must be the first human being to ever break a leg. I kind of don't care. He likes vagina more than he likes golf. Get over it. Like, what we've done with that fame, where we feel entitled to it, and in the comment section, we tear it down. Like, we're still doing that shit, Stugatz. We're just doing it differently. We're still doing the same shit to these people. We don't learn the lessons, even as they break all their bones and have sex addiction and drug addiction to get rid of the pain. We still tear at them like piranha.
I'm sorry about that last one.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.